WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We're positively into the big game season. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out at State Fair on Friday. I have a handful of the holiday cash drops. I have a couple of Raven scratch-offs left over, too. We'll give all these away to make room for the new wishbone in the 50th anniversary for the Maryland Lottery. It's also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation. I just happen to be wearing the shirt. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free, and you get 0% financing. I wish I knew about this deal. I didn't get 0% financing because I bought back in August. But if you buy now, buy two, get two free, and 0% financing for 5 years. 866-90-NATION. And crab cakes at State Fair with friends. This guy, you know, he doesn't come here in the winter to have crab cakes with me, but he had a lot of crab cakes in his childhood. He's been gallivanting all over this here country and time zones, time traveling, sort of like Webster did back in the ABA back in the day. He is now in Miami via Los Angeles. His heart and home are in Pikesville and Owings Mills here in Baltimore. Longtime Yahoo and Fox executive David Katz. He's Katzmandu out on the social media thing. Katz, before we even get started, I got thrown off Twitter about 6 weeks ago. I wrote a blog about Lamar Jackson and his potty mouth. And the next morning, I was completely thrown off of Twitter, suspended permanently. It was when all the journalists were getting thrown off. So I haven't been on. So when I say Katzmandu, I have been on the WNST Twitter, but, and I, you know, into things like that. But how are you? It's been a couple of months. I just haven't seen your daily, day-to-day thing the way I used to when the Katzmandu was doing the do that you do.
First of all, Nestor, you're acting like I'm soft, like I don't make it to Baltimore in the winter. I go to Baltimore in the winter. I went to the Carolina game. I'll go to one or two games in Baltimore every winter just to make sure I can still put on a winter coat.
You didn't bring me stone crabs. You know, I mean, I get this stigma that I'm a Maryland crab guy, and that's all. No. Stone crabs are good. I need those.
Stone crabs are good, but you know the power rankings is still Maryland blue crab at the top, stone crabs, king crab, Dungeness crab.
Everything else. Dungeness. Don't even put that on.
Absolutely.
Dungeness is like, it's sort of like that dessert you see and you look at it and you're like, nah, I mean, I think it looks like cake.
It's not worth the calories.
It looks a little dry. It looks like that icing's not going to be what I want. And I just, because you can't eat it all. You can't have it all. All right.
Exactly.
Well, in having it all, you are a lifer Raven fan, as well as a journalist at the Sports Fan Live, and we'll get into all of the things that you do and all the Super Bowl traveling you've done and us crossing paths and you being here with your, a lot of times with your family and your dad to see Ravens games. But the Lamar thing and your fandom, and I love having people like you on, because in the old days I would take phone calls, no offense to people with phone calls. They do that over at Odyssey. You can call all you want over there. I hear John Angelo's called in last week. I like the sophistication of where you come from the industry, last 25 years in the industry doing all this, but you wear your purple heart out on your sleeve everywhere you go on the internet. And I think your understanding of contracts and understanding of salary cap and understanding of draft picks and understanding of what it means to represent yourself in this whole thing, and you've negotiated contracts at a very high level in your position at Fox. What do you make of all of this? Like, when you get together with friends, what do you tell them about what you think is going to happen with Lamar Jackson?
Well, first of all, Nestor, the process so far, and we haven't even begun the next year of this, is exhausting. And it is dominating all of my group chats with all of my friends, both Baltimore friends and non-Baltimore friends. This is the topic of conversation. You got to give, and to unpack it a little bit, you got to give management credit. They have kept this very quiet. We don't know really what's been offered. We think we know. We don't know what's been offered. But I can tell you this, from a procedural standpoint, the tough thing for Eric DaCosta is, he is only allowed to speak with Lamar about his contract. When Lamar has made himself the agent effectively for himself, that means Eric cannot speak to other people, cannot say, oh, while you're playing, I'll talk to your mom, or I'll talk to the lawyer who's advising you in the background. You are not able to speak to anyone but Lamar. And imagine having those conversations where you have to explain to him, we love you, we support you, we built our offense around you, you're the most important athlete in this building and maybe, you know, in the state of Maryland. But in order to form a team that can compete, that can protect you on the line, that can do all the things we need to do, catch your passes, this is how much we can afford, and here's where the market will bear. And you have a situation where they keep coming saying, we expect to get what Deshaun had. That's the high watermark. And I don't know if you saw DeMaurice Smith's comments in an interview that he did on The Pivot lately.
Please tell me, because I did not see the quotes. Go ahead.
You can tell that he is saying, we had an opportunity to change the whole way that this quarterback situation, and candidly for other top players, goes. And it should go to fully guaranteed contracts. We had the dam broken with Deshaun Watson, and we've had multiple opportunities since then to stay there, and we haven't. Players have accepted non-guaranteed deals.
I don't want to be interruptive because I want to let you go, yeah. But I'll just say this as a personal experience of mine, that this really happened to me back when I was a real media member. I was at an All-Star game, and I want to say it was 99, 2000, 2001. And it was an All-Star game year when Messina was not in the All-Star game, but Tom Glavine was. And I knew Tom Glavine. I know Tom Glavine through my years of doing this for a living, right? Mm-hmm. Tom Glavine was doing my show, and he said to me, what's going on with Messina? And I'm like, he said, dude, he's the best pitcher in the sport. He can't take a preferred deal with Peter Angelos. Peter was trying to take him out in Little Italy and make a deal with him, you know, over Boccaccio, right? Back at whatever it was. And Tom Glavine pulled me up as a journalist and said, you got to talk to Messina. He can't. This is a union issue. Like, all of us are going to be up for the next deal. And, dude, I was 30 years old at the time. Maybe not even 30. I mean, to be really honest with you, maybe this happened in 95 or 96 or 97, now that I'm thinking about it, because Messina did take a preferred deal. Messina did take a friends and family deal with Peter, and then at the end, Peter wanted another one, as I wrote about in the Peter Principles. But that was 23 years ago in baseball, where I found myself in the, oh, no, you're not giving a hometown. No, Eric's a nice guy and all that, but we don't give discounts here because we're looking out for each other. It's a brotherhood, right? And I just wanted to speak to that is very, very much at play. There's an internal pressure when you're the best of the best to get the most money. There was that on Manny Machado here seven, eight years ago, right? Literally.
100%. When you hear JK's comments after the game, you hear Calais's comments after the game, they were not critical of Lamar. They wish Lamar was there, and they may have had frustration he wasn't out there, but you don't get the sense that they were critical of him pushing economically for as much as he can get, and or for changing the structure of these deals and making them more of a guaranteed structure. I think he has a lot of support among the player community for that. And I can't imagine the pressure he's getting from outside interests who are sitting there saying, Lamar, it rests.
Take the money. It's $140 million. Just take the money, right? Like, just take the money, right?
Well, I think it's the other way. I think it's Lamar, make sure it's guaranteed. I think he's getting pressure from the NFLPA or other side of the equation who's saying, you are the lightning rod. You are the biggest name out there. You have a chance to get a max, whatever quote-unquote max deal means, and you have a chance to reset the structure for generations to come. I think on the other side, look, Lamar's quote-unquote betting on himself has really worked to this point. If he had taken a deal 3 years ago, it would have been for far less. It would have been for Dak money.
It would have been like Steve Bisciotti selling the team 3 years ago for $3 billion before the plague, and thinking that's a lot, and now it's worth five.
In this sport, waiting has almost always been to the benefit of the seller.
This guy's been hurt and hadn't played in a playoff game. And if this thing hits the market and Eric's making phone calls on March 8th, who's lining up? And all of them, I think, are willing to pay more than the Ravens are willing to pay right now, because the Ravens feel sunburned to me, right? I mean, you're like, nobody knows. I'm watching this, and I'm not in the locker room, and I know the players are going to walk the line and say the right things and all that. But this has been bizarre, right? And it's more bizarre because, and maybe you speak better to this than anybody, he's unrepresented. So when they were saying he'll be back in a couple of weeks, and they're powwowing with Rich Eisen saying he'll be back by Christmas, he's going to be good. This is not a season-ending injury, as John Harbaugh pounds on the podium and says that to everyone. And then all of a sudden it was a season-ending injury, and there is this mystery of him disappearing. He was in Pittsburgh the day I had the press pass up there 2 weeks before Christmas. He walking around, looked like he was going to play. And now everybody's in damage control, right? Because they all lost. None of them won the Super Bowl, right? We know that, right? Everyone lost. So this has felt not on the up and up, as I always say to John Martin from the Maryland Lottery. It has felt very much like there has been mystery. It has been kept non-combustible, even though it feels like it could be combustible given the interest around it. But whatever they're going to do in the next 8 weeks, I will be stunned if Lamar Jackson is a Raven. I'll be stunned. And that's, I can go bet on that right now on my app, right? Like, so can you. But you know more about it than I do, you know, as well. But I would say I would be stunned if he's back. I don't know where the terms would be based on what I've seen the last 8 months here, beginning with the OTAs, to say this feels like a happy marriage for both of them, for both sides.
Look, I think what DaCosta came out and said was the truth. And I think he is a tremendous representative of this organization, the way he lays this out. His comments about Lamar, I believe in an ideal world, he would want Lamar back. I do think that he would want to, but he needs to do it on terms where he's allowed to build a competitive franchise around him. And Eric is not going to reset the quarterback market on a deal. Steve Bisciotti is not going to reset the payment structure and have to go to an owner's meeting if he starts attending and look his fellow owners in the eye and say, yeah, I reset the market. I paid the highest price and I issued, it's the first guaranteed deal for a quarterback is actually not the one that's going to set the new precedent. It's the second guaranteed deal that makes this a thing. And if an owner is respected, as Steve Bisciotti were to do that, then all the owners are going to be staring at him saying, every agent's going to call and say, you see that? You know, I know the other one was the Browns. This one was the Baltimore Ravens.
It almost sounds like collusion, what you're talking about, a little bit, just a little bit like that.
It's not collusion because Steve is making the decision that he feels is right for himself. And by the way, for the league. It's not collusion if he's not sitting in a room talking to all the other owners and saying, hey, if I do this, will you do this? I don't think there's any collusion here because I think there will be another owner who comes in and pays more than the Baltimore Ravens are willing to pay for Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar knows that.
And that's why I'm saying he's not taking a tag and going to come here and play. So if your friends think they're going to be at this for a year with Lamar, they're either going to pay him or he's not going to be in a uniform September 10th. I'm pretty convinced of that.
I think that's right, because I think the tag doesn't work, because I think what the tag does Lamar want $45 million? He absolutely does. Does Lamar want the risk that comes with playing for $45 million? He does not. So what he's not going to not play. He's not going to pull a Le'Veon Bell and walk away from this and not get his money and then try to come back. He will not go to OTAs. He will only attend the part of training camp that he has to. He will play an X number of games. He will likely get dinged, and then he will not come back and play and do anything where he's not, quote unquote, at 100% and put his body at risk. I thought his tweet was telling. He put the 100% in there. Like, you saw Patrick Mahomes get hurt this past week. You saw him like furious on the sideline that they were not putting him back in. He wanted to play. Like, that's a guy who knows that his money is taken care of and it's his legacy at stake. And he is all about now doing whatever he can to get back there, because his legacy is going to be how many AFC championships can he get to and how many Super Bowls can he win. And Lamar hopping off in both years, what appeared, at least again, I'm not a doctor, but what appeared to be not super terrible injuries, the way we've seen some catastrophic things on camera. And you do think to in your mind, okay, X number of weeks, a professional athlete with the training and technology they have and the quality of their care, they should be back out there, and they're not. Well, it seems like there's something bigger at play there than just the injury. Again, I don't know PCL grade 2 on to grade 3. No one from the Ravens has ever come out and said what this has been diagnosed as.
Well, if he called it a grade 2 on the way to grade 3, and that's really what it was, and that's what it is, and he's being honest, he's calling them liars.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, so, and that's why all of this, and the fact that he wasn't in Cincinnati, and the fact that he issued that statement and not the Ravens issuing that statement, says to me that there really is a lack of simpatico here. And again, I do go back to the fact that he's unrepresented, right? That he doesn't have anybody reaching to someone in the media to tell his side of the story or give his side of the story. And I don't know that his level of PR, and people go to school for this. You know, Chad Steele went to school. People go to school to be spokespeople for professionals. I don't know that he's that guy, and I don't know that this thing didn't get away from him to some degree. And to your point, you look at it from the Ravens' perspective. He wants top of school money. He's won one playoff game. He wants top of school money, and he's been injured the last two times that the bell has rung for us to play playoff games. He wants top of line money, and he's not the greatest passer. He's a fine passer. He's not the best passer. And he's not the best quarterback in the NFL. On any given day, he can win. Same as Joe Flacco in a different way. Nobody ever said Joe is the best quarterback today. He was the best quarterback a lot of days at the end of the game when he won games and they moved on in the playoffs. And someone else is going to love Lamar, right? Like, we saw this with this guy with this criminal record last year who might not be a better quarterback than Lamar. Certainly not more decorated than Lamar when it comes to MVP and what Lamar is capable of doing and what Lamar has proven on the field, certainly more than Deshaun Watson. But that money that was out there for him, those draft picks dangling, that raw meat for a franchise that needs to sell tickets and wants to sell hype and feels like it has some inertia, he would be a godsend to the Jets, to the Dolphins, to the Buccaneers, to the Texans, to the Panthers, to the on and on and on and on. And I know, you know this in the commercial, when they compete, you win, right? You know what I mean? There's just going to be, and it's also a competition where Eric DaCosta wins, right? Because if they slap a tag on him and restrict it out and they get two number ones and somebody has to match and they can still match and they're not going to match, they know somebody's going to offer 200 something that they're not ready to do for a guy that hasn't been ready to play in the playoffs the last 2 years, that they might get the biggest trade ransom in the history, right? They might get four ones. I mean, they might get something crazy for Lamar, and Lamar still might get his $212 million because Mr. Ross needs to sell skyboxes, and so does Mr. Glazer, right?
You're touching on what I think is ultimately the core of what's going to happen going forward, and this, is, to me, is the most interesting thing. It's not whether or not Lamar gets tagged. If there's no deal in place, he will get tagged. The question is which tag he gets, the exclusive tag or that non-exclusive tag. And if you remember when Ray Lewis's deal was up years ago, I remember reading that Ray thought he should have gotten X. The team said, we think your market is Y, and here's what we're able to pay you. And they let Ray go out and have conversations and find out what his market was.
He did our show for 45 minutes on Radio Row in Tampa that year. And the videos are all up on YouTube. Go check it out, because he was footloose and fancy free, and he, you know, he got paid good. He got paid top of market, and the Ravens were offering the most, and it stunned him, right? Like, literally stunned
you
him.
You have to prove, sometimes you have to prove it to yourself, you know, let Lamar see it for himself. Now, can you imagine the process for Lamar if with no agent, let's assume he continues with no agent. If he gets the non-exclusive franchise tag, he's going to be getting inbound calls. He is now going to have to negotiate 3, 4, 5 deals, take calls from everyone. Now, I don't know what kind of support he's got. He's got a team. He's got people helping him in the background.
I hope he does. I don't know any of them. I don't know of them.
Lamar is no dummy. Lamar is very savvy, and all of his moves to date have put more money in his pocket. And it's easy for us to sit here and say, you should take X or you should take
Y. And he hasn't even played, right? He hasn't won a big game since before I had a mask on. Like, literally, it's amazing, right? Like, literally, when it comes to what we're telling Josh Allen, what he didn't produce last week for Stephon Diggs and for a billion people in Western New York, there's a part of this that's been very skatey for Lamar, that he's going to get paid. To your point, I don't disagree with anything. He's made himself more money and negotiated himself in by not even having to go out on the field and play. It's amazing. Really is.
So let me ask you, Nestor, Do you believe that which way the Ravens will go? Will they go exclusive tag or non-exclusive tag? And you don't think there's any chance if they could get a good deal with Lamar, a quote unquote good deal, something similar to what they've offered in the past, maybe they make it a little richer and Lamar's willing to take it now. Do you think the Ravens want that? Or do you think they're just putting that out there now to look like they tried and they're really wanting to move on? Because you know, as well as I do, this was a franchise in quarterback purgatory for a very long time.
I'm really glad you asked me that, David. By the way, David Katz is here. Tell me what you do and who you are, and then I'll answer your question because you've been my friend for a long time, but I don't want to get all your resume wrong as far as what you've done and what you're doing, but you are one of Baltimore's own. So people just got in the car and they're listening. Tell everybody what you do.
I've done a lot of things, but everything I've done has really been in the digital sports space, thinking about what the future of sports is for people online, on their mobile phones, in gambling, all the new trends and tools and techniques that have come over the last 20 to 25 years in sports, where it's become our ability to have this conversation on video remotely, an incredible thing, and how the sports fan experience can change. And the company is called The Post Game. It's been called that for a while. And I have an amazing team running that business now for me and with me. And we are basically a content and marketing agency for leagues, for teams, for athletes, for media companies. And we help them do a lot of video production, content syndication, social media work, a lot of behind the scenes stuff that makes their stuff great for fans. And you as I know, I've done it at Fox Sports and Yahoo Sports and CBS Sports over a long period of time. And it's really a great industry. And it's amazing where it is today and how much money, time, care, attention goes into it. It's transformative for a lot of people in a lot of places.
I'm a complete idiot. I forgot about CBS. I said sports fan, and that wasn't even the place. I've messed up. The Post Game. There he is, David Katz, Katzmandu. Also a way to find him on Twitter. So I'm glad you asked me that because nobody's asked me that. I feel like I was on your show when you're asking me, like, what do I really think has happened? I think they're both disgruntled. I mean, that's my honest opinion is Lamar doesn't really want to be here because he doesn't feel like they believed in him. If he felt that way, he wouldn't have been holding signs up. He wouldn't have been skipping out on OTAs. He would have been in Cincinnati, at least in a press box, sitting down somewhere, waving a towel with his teammates. I sense the disgruntled nature. John Harbaugh and I had a private moment back in the spring when Lamar missed OTAs, and I knew of John's disgruntled nature for how you would feel as a coach when your guy is not there for OTAs, and then that it lingers on, that it's been a second year of being outed, that clearly there were people in the organization who thought he would be ready to play a playoff game, if not before, and he wasn't. And there is and I use this the morning after, Dave, the morning after they lost to the Bengals. I said big trust, right? Big trust meant trust with a T, right? The trust is gone, right? I sense a lack of, are you really hurt or are you fake? You wouldn't fake it. But David Katz just came on and said, hey, dude, no, you're not paying me. And I don't have it, you know, like, and it's not all the way right. So I'm not, you know, but could you have gone? And Lamar, hypothetically, if we gave you $185 million, would you have played? Because if you would have played, you should have played and you could have played. And all of our asses were on the line and we lost and you didn't play. And so there's a little bit of that. And then there, I just think the Lamar WTF with Hollywood Brown, I think that rubs some people the wrong way. They knew he was being traded. He was told. And Eric made that clear and said, come on, man. You know, like, you knew we were trading this guy. You don't need to, there don't need to be theatrics. And you know, he asked out. And we accommodated him. And David, I would tell you another part of this, and this is maybe speaks more to the modern athlete. And I did have a moment out on the internet earlier this week when the Cincinnati Bengals went back to that bar that looked like the barn, and they got up and they were giving footballs out, you know, and I thought of the barn and, you know, back in the old days and how the old days rolled and all of that stuff. In the old days, nobody ever asked out of Owings Mills. You know, I mean, to Trevor Price's and all those guys that came here at the end of the Billick era and all that, Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, Terrell Sutton, nowhere else I'd rather be. Guys came in from other places, and the Derek Masons and we love Baltimore. This is where we want to be. This was a beacon for the Calais Campbells and the Chris Canties and people that wanted it, Eric Weddle. I go down the list, I go to any of these guys. Name all the wide receivers because they can't draft one. But in recent times, seeing Hayden Hurst run around this week was a first-round draft pick who said, I need out. In an offense that could have been designed to get him the ball more. They would have had like two tight ends that were wide receivers. That would have been kind of interesting, right? But he didn't want to be here because he wanted the ball. And then this offense doesn't allow anybody who's a wide receiver to be poachable. I had Barry Trotz on the show a couple months ago. And we're talking about jobs. And the Winnipeg job, he's from there. He would love to be there. He can't recruit there. He can't win there. So if you can't recruit, you can't win. So part of recruiting the wide receiver thing and drafting these wide receivers, but I think for both sides here, you know, Hayden Hurst is asked out. Orlando Brown is asked out. They're playing football this week. Who else? Two or three other guys have asked out of here the last couple of years that want out. Hollywood Brown being another one. So to have the quarterback ask out, there used to be a time where I think, nobody wants to leave Purple Camp happy in Owings Mills. Everyone wants to play for Mr. Bisciotti and for this winning organization. This team's won two games in 10 years in postseason. So I don't know that it's that. And I would just say that the nature of the public face as a professional who's done this my whole life, being an inside, outside, knowing agents, knowing how the game's played back of house, how the kitchen works, this feels like a divorce to me, Dave, you know? And it feels like they'll both come out saying the right things and they've all said the right things for now so that they can get their piece and they can get their draft picks and they can maximize value. No one wants to urinate on Lamar and mess with his value because you want draft picks. No, Lamar doesn't want to mess with them and look disgruntled. So he's already done enough. He's held a sign up in front of the world and said, pay me. He's WTF'd his franchise on draft night when they dealt his buddy that they knew he was trading. He's told a poor guy in Pennsylvania to perform fillet, you know, like all of these things he's done. It took him 5 days to apologize and they had to drag him out. And he said his girlfriend told him to take it down. So like, I don't, and this happened 6 weeks ago. So I just think there will be a divorce. Yeah. There will be a parting of the ways, and how they manage it is fascinating from a PR standpoint as to who points at who holds their nose, what the excuse would be. We just tried our best and we just couldn't come to terms, and you know, and God bless Lamar. We love Lamar, but we couldn't do that to our salary cap here, and we had to reload, and Lamar didn't play in the playoffs now. Once he's traded, he wasn't available in January, you know, like, but between
the Ravens are going to handle this with class. They are. They're going to handle it with class. They're going to say the right thing. They always do.
They did on Thursday at that press conference.
They're not going to throw Lamar under the bus. They're going to talk about his accomplishments here and how he transformed the position and what he meant to the community. And by the way, all that stuff is true. And it just may be that sometimes a divorce is the right way to go. But think about this. If there was one player in the ear of Lamar during this entire, like, call it last 2 years, who could have really changed his mindset to the negative about playing and about the risks and everything. The one guy, I think, in the entire history of the league, that if you're the Ravens, you wouldn't want him talking to him. And if you're Lamar, you'd want to hear it, is Robert Griffin III. That guy did what Lamar is afraid to do.
And he's also fronting for Lamar the morning after Lamar was sick, which is why he didn't go to Cincinnati. No one in the world's reported that other
so
than RG3.
It's very
right?
clear that these guys are friends. They played together. We put RG3, we put a guy who had this injury history as his backup in that quarterback room every day, making him their best friends. And you got a guy who's going to sit there and say, I'm the cautionary tale. You look at me every day. I'm the cautionary tale. I'm on TV today. I'm not playing today. And
I could have had $200 million, but I don't, right? Literally.
Exactly. I mean, he was the electric MVP-esque player in that first year or two, changing the game dynamic, and it ended abruptly. So as soon as I saw RG3's post saying, would you play?
How much money did RG3 make in career? If you had to look him up, My wife and I play this in baseball players.
No,
all
I'm
going
to guess he made $40 million, $36 million.
$33 million. Okay. Lamar's made $33 million now.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Yes. Fair enough.
Correct. Okay. I'm just saying, like, it's all who you hear from, right? Aren't we all affected by the conversations we just had and the friends that we have and the experiences they went through? So think about it from Lamar's perspective. Here's a friend, a colleague sitting there who he had this relationship with, who's telling him, look at me. Don't be me. And I don't know. This is not journalism. I don't know. I'm just
nobody has said that on the air with me this week, and it's the most astute. I mean, that's why I have you on, Katz. David Katz is here. He is with the post game, as well as you can find him at a Katz Man too. But there's an interesting observation. It's who is in his ear. It's pretty obvious who's in his ear, right?
When I saw RG3 come out with that post after everyone was criticizing Lamar for not being available in Cincinnati, it like dawned on me. This is why Lamar slowed things down. Lamar probably was ready to play. And then I'm sure he had conversations like, is your knee 100%? What is your chance? What's your risk? What's the chance of re-injury? What does that do for you in an off season that's so important for you? And again, no one's wrong. The Ravens are not wrong if they are upset about him not being available, because you know what? With Tyler Huntley, they were the better team against Cincinnati. They should have won that game. They should have been playing Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Chances of winning that game would not have been great, but they would have had a chance. And you know what? With Lamar, and the Ravens have won two Super Bowls. And how do they win two Super Bowls? Great defense and a quarterback that got hot. Not the best quarterback, a quarterback who got hot, and a team that just found its identity. And it was, I think the Ravens build, as you've heard Ozzie Newsome say in the past, we got to win the division, we got to get in the tournament, and then anything can happen. And their style of football translates in December and January, maybe more than a lot of these other teams. So you know what? They could have made a run. The Chiefs don't look unbeatable. The Bills did not look unbeatable.
Well, with Lamar Jackson back playing, if Lamar had slow played this and just gotten totally healthy, and the whole organization said on Christmas, take 3 weeks off, come back, give it your go. They knew they were in the playoffs Christmas Eve. Literally, right? So they could have just shut this down and said, we're not all that concerned with home and road game. We're not going to go through all that trouble to get a home game. We've done that and lost at home before. Let's just get you right. We're in this together, Lamar. We're family. We're going to. That didn't happen. By the way, what do you think is going to happen? What's your crystal ball when you and I get together on draft night, as we will do, eat some barbecue to honor those folks in Kansas City celebrating? When are we getting a draft in Baltimore? So we get together on draft night, April 28th, which is 100 days from now. We got 100 days. What's going to happen? My crystal ball is tag, trade, I don't know what team, whoever. You know, I just know it'll be a lot, and he'll get a lot. He'll get a lot. They'll get a lot. They'll call it a business transaction, and we'll move forward, because I just don't think they're going to pay him. To your point, they're not going to give him the most money guaranteed, and I don't think he's that happy here in general, and it hasn't felt happy. So I feel like the divorce. Where are you?
Yeah. So obviously we're working with highly imperfect information, but I think there's a decision tree that's going to happen here. Eric DaCosta has had conversations with other teams. Now, I think he has a general sense of what he will get from these teams if in a trade situation.
And who wants Lamar? Not everybody wants Lamar.
Not everyone wants them.
I mean, you have to change everything to bring Lamar in. And you have to give him $50 million, and you have to figure out who your wide receivers are going to be, because you're not going to be able to recruit him either. So, these teams are smart.
As I thought about it, the one interesting move that I think we could do, and I'm curious what other people would think, and I'm sure you'll get feedback on this one. To me, the interesting move is you trade Lamar, you get picks, you give one or two of those picks to the Bears, you take Justin Fields, and the Bears are sitting there at a chance to take the top pick in the draft. And then you have a quarterback who has a lot of the essence of Lamar, probably hasn't had as good a coaching as Lamar, but you wouldn't need to transform your entire offense. and you get to reset the clock, not all the way back to a rookie deal, but to another deal. And then this comes down to whether or not you believe the philosophy that you've now had 3 to 4 years of run first with an RPO type quarterback. Like, again, this is stuff I can't evaluate.
Well, this was an experiment, right? John called it, before he called it a revolution, he called it an experiment. It went from an experiment to a revolution to now 3 years later when you don't win playoff games to, maybe it's a CD and we should move on to digital. You know what I mean?
They have a perspective. They have a perspective on that. And we will find out what that perspective is based on what decisions are made. Do they go for someone else with a run, more of a running style, run first, pass second? Because if you hear that, then they believe that's the future of the league. Tight ends, receivers that block, not receivers that catch, all of this stuff. And we will see what they really think of this, because you have really the best talent that could do this. I don't know. I think they are going to know what the haul could be. They're going to have those deals in their back pocket. And based on which tag they put on him, will tell you whether it's a 2 number 1 pick offer or whether it's a more than 2 number 1 pick offer on the table for someone like him. And then here's the interesting thing. What if Lamar doesn't reach an agreement with another team? And you've put the non-exclusive tag on him, so there's no deal to match. And you've got him there. And if you're going to trade Lamar without Lamar signing a long-term deal, you're not getting very much back for Lamar. So you may then be sitting with Lamar at $35 million as opposed to $45 million or wherever the numbers play out. And Lamar might just be saying, Kirk Cousins, this whole thing. All right, I made 25. I'll make 35. I'll make 50. And then I'm a true free agent and I can get true value. And by the way, what's going to happen with the salary cap then? These new TV deals will have kicked in. The new gambling partnerships will have kicked in. The real money on Thursday Night Football. When people hear a new TV deal, you ask me about contracts. When people hear that a new TV deal has been struck and it's doubled the money, it doesn't double the money overnight. One, that deal's done 1 or 2 years before the old contract ends and the new contract begins, before it's reset. And number two, that's an average annual value deal. So if Fox goes from 1.1 to 1.7 or whatever the numbers were that were reported, well, that's an average annual value. That means that in year one of that deal, it might be $1.2 billion. And in year 10 of that deal, it might be $2.2 billion.
Well, at that point, you just know your cap's going from 208 to 220 to 232 to 244, and it's going to happen quickly. I mean, it went up $12 million, and it's going to go bigger than $12 million, right?
It's so it's $12 million, there will be a jump.
It will be $250 million by 27 or 28, right? Like very, very quickly, to where that extra $10 million where quarterbacks are getting $48 million, they'll be getting $60 million by then.
They will. They will, absolutely. Which is why signing
Patrick Mahomes already has a bad deal.
He does. And by the way, I don't know if you saw what Mike Florio suggested, which was interesting because I had a very similar conversation with someone. If you have someone you really want to keep and he is the face of your franchise and you believe in him the way I think Cincinnati has to feel about Joe Burrow, there's a whole other story there about whether Mike Brown can afford that deal based on NFL rules where you have to put a certain amount of that guarantee in escrow. He doesn't have the cash for it. And by the way, does Joe Burrow want to be on a team where they won't be able to keep all of those weapons? They just can't. So that receiver room is going to look very different in the future, but that's for another time. But imagine if you went to Joe Burrow and said, I'm going to give you a 10-year deal at 25% of my cap or whatever that number is. You'll be 25%. It'll reset every year based on whatever 25% of that salary cap is. So in 7 years, it's a deal that's time-proof for the quarterback, and it's structured in such a way that the team knows they will never have to pay more than X percent on a quarterback because they've made that calculation.
Well, they love cost certainty for all these positions, right?
So is that the type of model that might happen going forward for these deals? Because ultimately, an X guaranteed deal that's not a fully guaranteed deal is basically a 3 or 4 year deal with a cap hit, but you can take dead money on a cap hit when you know the cap is going to be X. You can work your way through that over time. So look, I think what the Ravens have offered has probably been very generous, but not maximum. And how often do you sit there and say, I love my situation. I know what my situation is. The grass may not be greener and I'm very comfortable. And a lot of these people like certainty, like comfort. And that's what this franchise tag is all about. It's giving these parties a chance to figure out something that is probably a below market deal. The only way you get to true market economics is true free agency. And the structure is not there for that. And I think it's good that it's not there for that, because I still think there's a pot of gold for the player. And I think there's a way for teams who have invested in these players to retain them either for longer or forever. And I think the NFL is not the perfect system, but it tends to be the most perfect system at creating the excitement that every fan has on September 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, whatever day one is, that your team could make the playoffs and win the Super Bowl. Almost every team feels that on week one.
David Katz is here. He is, of course, here at the post game and at Katzmandu. He's down in South Florida. He is our Raven super fan and long time sports executive at more alphabet places than I have actually named here. I just like saying Yahoo when I do talk about that. Last thing for you, because this has been a lengthy deep dive on Lamar. But what else is there between all of us and our friends, right? But the next thing would be this. And we finally sign Lamar. We give him $3 billion. And 3 years from now, we make it to the AFC Championship game. We're 15-2. And lo and behold, the AFC Championship game is in Seattle, because that's what they decide that they're going to play it. The week before, we've moved into like the Peach Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl era, haven't we? Like, we're now in that conversation based on this tragedy, near tragedy, certainly wasn't a good situation with DeMar Hamlin, that they put this Atlanta thing together, and lo and behold, we find out they were planning this in the kitchen all along, and we're just moving more toward that. That would really be a shame, Dave. Like, we haven't had an AFC Championship game in the city. I pined away for 26 years. We came this close with Peyton Manning in 06 and, you know, spit up our tea a couple of years ago against the Chargers. Like, that was the great purple hope, was to play a game here, right? Man, they got taken out away, right? I mean, they might as well just bend over my PSL, right? Or my former PSL.
I do think that the idea of a neutral field championship game, both in AFC and NFC, is a possibility in the next 5 to 10 years. I think think about what the Super Bowl has become. And I went to I went to SoFi Stadium for the national championship game in college football. Obviously weather, obviously location. It was not the same. What the Super Bowl has captured, it is the best sports conference of the week for people like you and I. It is the best like fantasy week, where all the athletes of yesteryear come together and fans connect with them. It is a party. It is the restaurants, the clubs, everything. It is a festival of sport. And they've done it in an amazing way. And they've milked a lot of money out of that, but they've also created a lot of value for fans, because it's an incredible experience. And if your team goes, it's really an incredible experience. So I'm sure they're thinking, can they do it again for an AFC and NFC championship game? Can you put it in it? The problem is you have AFC all over the country. So you're going to put it in an NFC stadium. And if it's an NFC game, you're going to put it in an AFC stadium. And where you put it, if you put it in the middle of the country and the Chiefs are playing more.
Which one's MetLife, by the way, and which one's SoFi? I'm just asking.
Great question. Alternating years.
Want it in MetLife Stadium because it snows there. They don't want that. They had that with the Super Bowl years ago, and they lucked out by 48 hours.
It could be in a dome. It would be in a dome. It would be in warm weather. It's gonna have that.
It would be like a bowl game, literally.
It's gonna be a mini festival feel, exactly. And I can see that happening, because when that happens, the league sells the tickets. So the league gets the money. So all the owners benefit instead of one owner
Well, that owner should benefit because his team was the best team. And, I mean, God bless Clark Hunt and his beautiful family. You know, like, they got the game. Cincinnati's got a beef about that. But Philadelphia on fire this weekend. Why would you want that game played in Tampa or Miami? I mean, no offense to Tampa or Miami, and you're there, and I'm going to be coming to Tampa next week to see Springsteen, so I'll hear you. But I wouldn't want that. If I was an Eagle fan, I'd be pissed if they moved the game. And I'd be pissed as a Chiefs or Bills fan, but that was an extenuating circumstance. But to spin that into the Peach Bowl in Atlanta and the Fiesta Bowl in Phoenix as a precursor to the Super Bowl in Dallas, I don't know.
Just think about what a Bills-Chiefs game would be with half the stadium red, half the stadium blue.
At the Super Bowl, and you know what it would be? It would suck, because I go every year to the Super Bowl, and it half sucks. It never really gets loud. It never really gets it's fun. It's interesting, but it's not like a football game. The Super Bowl's not like at all. It doesn't sound when you're – I've been to 28 of them. It doesn't feel and sound at all like a Ravens-Steelers game in Pittsburgh or Baltimore, either way.
Follow the money. Follow what could they charge. You know, they'll figure something out. Pro Bowl the day before, then they have that. Like, there's a whole thing they'll figure out. To
God
make
bless
it
them. You know, we'll buy it. We'll watch, right? They go
they're
out and almost kill each other, and we watch, right?
They're really, really good at this. Mm-hmm. I, as a business person, as a quote-unquote media executive, their ability to thread the needle, and every time you think, oh, they're saturating the market, they don't. They just slightly undersaturate it. There's so much demand. There's so much
interest. They still got Friday night football. I was bitching to my wife the other night, there's no Monday night football. Last week, they play a Monday night wild card game. This week, we're like, give me. It's like a fix. It's like drugs. Give me.
They will be playing 4 or 5 nights a week.
All right, dude, there's three games left and the Pro Bowl.
We're going to want it.
And they're bringing in flags, and they're bringing in Peyton and Eli. Who doesn't love Peyton and Eli? Who doesn't love David Katz? He's Katz man, do. He is our Baltimorean by birth, Floridian by choice, enjoying the good life. You having a good time? Everything good with your life?
Everything is good. My parents split time between Baltimore and Miami, so decided to come down here to spend more time with them, and it's been a great decision. And it gets me closer to Baltimore, closer to New York. There's a lot going on in those two places for me, and life is good, man. If you have your health,
listen,
life is good.
Meet me at Epcot next Thursday, and we'll go around the world in 30 beers, and we'll have a good time as I make my way from Tampa to Atlanta for dude, Bruce, I'm wearing it's my Window Nation shirt, but this is my Born in the USA shirt, okay? You know what I'm saying?
That would be an amazing concert.
You know, I said to my wife, and this is the God's honest truth, I'm a couple of days out, and I'm a little bit like, you know, the box of chocolates kid. It almost feels like the Ravens are in the Super Bowl, even though they're not. It almost feels like I'm going to the Super Bowl, even though I'm not. But I would say this. For me, with the Bruce thing, I haven't even listened to a Springsteen song other than what's come on in 8 months, because I just want it to be really fresh. You know what I mean? Kind of like if you skip preseason football and you just put it on the first night, it's fresh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It'll be fresh.
All right. David Katz is here.
Katz Bandu. 2.5 to 3 hours, so it'll be worth it.
It's going to be a marathon for a septuagenarian. I can't believe I said that about Bruce. I am Nestor. He's David Katz. Go find him out at the post game. He is a friend of ours, as always. And following every little morsel and nugget of any purple plume of smoke that may fly out of Owings Mills between now and whenever they inevitably
sign
Lamar or trade Lamar. Right.
Hey, whatever they do will be the right decision.
They won't kick the ball till September the 10th unless the Bengals win the Super Bowl and they start the season on the 7th. So remember that between now and then, as Ozzie would say, and I know Eric has patented this one, we don't have to play tomorrow. We don't have to play till September. We're good. David Katz, appreciation for him, my dude. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive. Stay with us.